You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Well, good evening to you, and welcome to the second and final hour of the show. It is a Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are, of course, powered by SID Media. Thank you so much for staying with us from 6 p.m. this evening. We really, really appreciate it, and we look forward to hearing from you. +27734703520. If you don't know that number by now, where were you and where have you been? What were you doing all along? But we appreciate you. Thank you so much for joining us. It is a Thursday, and that means, of course, it is Shapeshifter Thursday. This is one of the segments that I really, really like about the show and enjoy so much, because this is where we bring you some of the leading minds, not just people, ne? Yeah, like me. Now I'm just a person living on this planet Earth of God. But we bring you some of the best people. They are our shapeshifters. And today is no different at all. Our shapeshifter today is Cindy Siwetwala Siboka, a retired journalist with a broad range of TV, radio, and online journalism experience, among several other notable accolades, which she will share with us this evening. And you're welcome to join us as well if you want to ask a question. +27734703520. That's where you can find us. And she's joining us on the line. Good evening, ma'am.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for availing yourself. We appreciate your time. How are you?
I am blessed.
You're
highly
blessed.
Favored. It's been a great, great year.
Okay. It's been a great year, you say.
Yeah, it's been fantastic.
I'd like to hear a lot about that, but before we get into that, we just want to thank you for your time. I mean, this is a segment that we do every single Thursday, and basically the reason behind it is this is a time when we get to at least know the person behind the person, because we may read about you, we may watch you, we may see you, we may remember you, you know, those type of things. But also for young people, you know, who may never get to have the opportunity to talk to you or ask you questions, but who also may believe that if you made it, they too can make it, right? So so we really appreciate you, and that's why we have this particular segment on the show. As I said to our listeners, +27734703520. I want to take you back, Mom Cindy Siwa, and I know this might be a bit of weird question, but it is a question nonetheless, because I find that it's a very difficult question, but also a very simple question. If I was to take you back, when people ask you, "Ubani uMam Cindy Siwe," who do you say you are, or how do you even answer that question?
I always say I'm firstly a child of God.
Ah, lovely.
And I also tell people that I am just a simple, blessed girl who is living her dreams,
okay,
and also living in her destiny, which she did not even imagine would come true. So I always say that I'm in I'm experiencing a earth through things and steps that even my forefathers would not have imagined would happen in their lineage. So that's what I always say to people, that I'm literally living a blessed life. That is above me.
So that's not just an affirmation or just you saying it, but it's something that you actually are living.
Yes. Literally, I'm always shocked when people say, "So you've done X, Y, and Z, X, Y, and Z," and I'm always like, it's literally the grace. I am living my wildest dreams.
Okay, that's interesting. I don't think I've really interviewed people who are bold enough to say, "I'm living my wildest dream." And I think that's really an interesting. It's things we need to embrace, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
So why do we shy away? I mean, sometimes I always speak to, for example, people who come from privileged families, and I always say, I mean, embrace it. If you come from a privileged family, you come from a privileged family. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I feel like this is one of those things where we need to embrace them at times.
Yes, definitely. Because it's not everyone, unfortunately, gets to live out their dreams. People die with so many dreams not fulfilled. So when God gives you that opportunity and you actually get to some of those things, not all of them as yet, You must just be like, oh God, thank you.
Oh,
Like, I
wow.
can't believe I'm able to do this.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Where were you born, Mom Cindy?
I was born in Denylton,
Okay.
to my mom and dad, but to my mom who was a teacher.
Yeah.
I grew up with my grandmother up until I was about three, in a place called, it's outside of Ermelo, so I don't know
Yes,
that people will know
yes,
that, but outside of
yes.
Ermelo.
Yeah.
And then when my grandmother died, I went to go live with my mom and dad
Okay.
in Oorgies,
Okay.
Lephola in Mpumalanga
Yes, I know that place very
for,
well.
yes, but we
Yeah.
didn't live in Oorgies, the town at the time. We
Okay.
lived in Oorgies on the outskirts, almost Emaplotin.
Yes, okay, I see.
Yes,
I
because
see.
my dad, he was teaching in a school there, so
Yeah.
we lived in one of the houses there.
Yeah.
And then fast forward, when I was about 10, 11, we moved to Emalahleni,
Oh,
Witban.
okay.
That's where I experienced having a family home, like I have my mom and dad's actual home. I think that's where everything for me started, in Witbank.
Okay. And this is like what your primary years.
This is primary. This is
Yeah.
from grade four up until I completed matric.
Oh, okay. So grades 1 to 3, you are in Denylton.
No. Grade 1 to 3,
Yeah.
I'm in Grill, but we
Yeah.
live in the outskirts of Oorgies. I was
In
traveling about
Grill.
30 km every day to school and back. And then grade 4 up until matric. It's still home even today. It's Witbank.
Okay, that's lovely. Now, what was it like as a child? I suppose, growing up in Ochi's, what were some of the challenges that you could see, or you were exposed to?
I must say that I only properly experienced what challenges were when we moved to Witbank.
Okay,
But at
okay.
that time, everything was so rosy. Like
Yeah.
I literally grew up in a middle income household,
Yes,
both my
yes.
parents educators.
Yeah.
I lacked nothing. I
Yeah.
don't want to, I never lacked anything growing up as a child. When we moved to Witbank,
Yeah.
we now moved a town, a suburb.
Yes.
That's when I started realizing that, hey, we're not as affluent or okay as I thought we were, because you're now staying next door to the Jones, you're now
Yes,
staying next door
yes.
to people who are actually affluent. But it
Okay.
wasn't really an issue as per se.
Yeah.
I think what I was then faced with was interacting with different races. For me, that's when
Okay.
I had my first interaction with racism.
Yes,
This is when,
yes.
from I think high school
Yeah.
was quite intense,
Yeah.
because I used to sing provincially, so we used to go to Middelburg. Middelburg
Yeah.
was very racially charged,
Yes,
so
yes.
you could get run over
Sure.
crossing the street as a black person at
Yo.
that time, and it wasn't
Yo.
like in the 90s. It was 2010 to 2008,
Oh my goodness.
so it was still that situation. So I think one of the issues that I encountered more than anything was racism from a young age.
Yeah, that's that. And I suppose as a child, things like racism don't really, we aren't born racist, let me put it like that, I
Yes,
suppose.
yeah.
We have to be taught this thing. We are taught that don't look at this person like this, look at them that way. Because, I mean, as a child, you see a human being, you see the next human being, you don't really see racism and all that. Was it something that at home there was a need to just contextualize it?
Not even. So my parents, as much as they were educators,
Mm.
they literally believed in the same type of thinking as all their age mates, people born in the 1960s, 1950s, is that uzokhula. It's really,
Okay.
really not that intense. We're not going to
Yeah.
have this discussion. You should be thankful that you go to these schools.
Yeah.
It's quite unfortunate, but if it's seriously a situation, let us know. The one time in
Yeah.
grade four, when we moved to Witbank and I started at a purely Afrikaans school
Yeah.
that had like an English class. That's
Yeah.
the I lasted 3 days in that school. My mom came
Ooh.
to fetch me from school because I said I can't do this.
Yeah.
Then I went to a double medium Afrikaans and
Yeah.
English school.
Yeah.
That's the one time where my parents were like, okay, clearly you've never been somebody who doesn't want to go to school.
Yes.
So this must be serious. And they came and I could actually say they rescued me. But besides that, we were not having conversations. All my parents used to say was, if it's a serious problem, tell the teachers. But it was hardly the teachers that were the problem. It was the kids. Because
sure.
it was a very white area
yeah.
at the time.
Yeah.
There were black people here and there, but they were still not comfortable with us being in what they termed their schools.
Yes, yes. Sure. And in the community, like you said, was it also predominantly white as well?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was mixed. In the beginning when I got there, it was very mixed.
Yeah.
Then as time progressed, more and more black people came into the areas.
Okay.
Then it became more and more I see proper representation of people like me. But in the beginning, especially in the schools, even though you could see a lot of us at school, but the system was still, if you can't, English would be taught in Afrikaans, for example, in that one school that I went to for 3 days. But
sure,
when
yeah.
I went to the different school in
yeah.
primary, it was awesome.
Yeah.
I felt represented because the teachers were also African, and it was a purely bilingual school.
Bilingual school. Pratie Afrikaans, Mam Sindisi.
Yeah, I can, but
okay.
I can't speak it. I can understand it, but
yeah.
it really, I need to dig deep. Hey?
You need to dig deep. Eh? Yeah, that's true. and how would you say that has shaped the kind of a person that you are with what politicians always say is hindsight. When you look at it from a hindsight right now, those challenges, when you look back at them, would you say they have shaped the kind of person that you are, whether a small bit or to a large extent?
Yeah, I think they've made me more tolerant and
tolerant,
more
sure.
aware. So I, for everyone who's ever worked with me, will tell you that I do not necessarily see race. I just interact with people as I interact
yeah.
with people.
Yeah.
But when I am confronted with difficult situations that require me to handle them, I am quite direct.
Yeah. Ooh.
And I do not beat about the bush
yes.
about what it is that affects me.
Yes.
I'm diplomatic at times,
yeah.
but I like to be direct about situations.
Yeah.
So it's made me brave.
Sure.
But it's also made me tolerant. I
okay.
know when to attend to the elephant in the room and I know
yeah.
when to ignore it.
Okay.
So I think that at an early age took me out of the glossy shell
yes.
of thinking life is perfect, my
yes.
mom and dad are okay. Because I wasn't confronted with the socioeconomical issues
yes.
that challenge
yes.
a lot of African people.
Yeah.
So this was, if you will, the demon that I had to go through.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, I mean, you would have wanted to be friends with, you know, I suppose the other race. And I'm not belaboring the point yet, but I think it
yeah.
really comes through quite strong because we're not talking about something that happened pre-1994.
No.
We're speaking about something that also happened after 1994, which is the crazy part about it.
I think what's ironic is that immediately, so in grade four, I had that situation and I experienced it again in high school, I think around grade 9, 10, 11. But when we went to Middelburg, not so much in Witbank, because Witbank by that time had been almost completely transformed. There was an element of tolerance in the air. But in grade five, grade six, my next door neighbor, the family that moved in,
yeah.
actually made an Afrikaans friend.
Ah.
The dad wasn't so into our friendship, if you will, but
sure.
me and her maintained
yes.
the relationship up until I finished matric.
Yes.
She taught me Afrikaans. She helped me with my prep for Afrikaans. In high school, I played hockey.
Sure.
And you know that hockey is a mixed race kind
yeah.
of sport.
Yes.
I made
yes.
a lot of interesting friends there.
Yeah.
That every odd time we still speak. So the irony was that what was a challenge in the beginning then made me see people first and then only later
yeah.
realize that, oh, okay, not everyone is this way.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then now Witbank. I mean, I know a bit of Witbank. I've spent some
yeah.
time there in Witbank. Very nice town. But I think it has its own challenges, right? I know that
yes.
water is definitely one of those challenges
yes.
there. It's a
yes.
mining town, literally opportunities are galore. What was it like then, you know, moving to town, Witbank, you mentioned something interesting there, that all of a sudden what you could afford, I suppose, back at Grill was now a bit of a challenge, because life there seems to be a little bit more high standard.
Yes. Yeah, I remember in the outskirts of Oegis, it was a situation of, we lived in a property that was owned by the school that my dad taught at. So obviously we're not paying bond or anything like that. And it was a two-income household.
Yeah.
But when we moved to Witbank, we now have, my parents now had a bond that they were paying. We lived in the suburbs. My parents were, I must say, quite good with money. They were penny pinches. So they literally accounted for every 5 rand that left the house. But you could also feel as a child that we are now slightly stretched as to where we were initially. When ice cream was always in the fridge, ice cream is now there maybe every second week.
Yeah.
But not as it was. Or sometimes you don't see ice cream for some time.
Yeah.
But we're getting by. But we're still good. We're still able to have, we didn't have DSTV, but then we had Mnet.
Yeah.
The one that will come every now and then vanish.
Mm-hmm.
So some comforts were taken away.
Sure.
We now had this big place, this big house, but it's not furnished like the Jones or the Van Amerves down the street, because you'd go there.
Yeah.
So it was basically two almost middle-aged parents who were literally doing their best, but wanting to afford their kids stuff that they didn't have, because they now wanted this to be a home that their kids grew up in or grow up in.
Okay. And when you are used to privilege, at least used to certain things, you know, and all of a sudden those are taken from you. I mean, with good reason, right? Because there's obviously adjustment, you know, moving to a bigger place requires more expenses and all that.
Yeah.
I don't know what type of relationship you had with your parents, but were you guys seated down and told Jorge, look, things are going to change now, or you had to see and figure it out, Jorge, that ice cream is not coming every day anymore?
Parents, my parents, I always say this, it's like the same type of parents from a lot of the experiences that my people growing up in that time experienced.
Yeah.
They didn't really do a lot of communicating or explaining why things are the way they are.
Yeah.
You must just be thankful that you have your transport, you could be walking to school.
Yeah.
You need to be thankful that you have clothes on your back. You need to be thankful that you get winter clothes.
Mm.
Other kids don't get winter clothes. We do get winter clothes.
Yeah.
So we were never sat down. But I think what I have always had, and it's what a lot of firstborns I feel get, you almost sense that there's something that your parents are going through, but they'll never sit you down and talk to you about.
Yeah.
And you then take the deputy parent role to then explain to the others that this is the situation and we need to be okay with it.
Sure. I feel like parenting is now changing these days, right? Because I think I can relate exactly to what you're saying, you know, where we grew up at a time when parents, like you just have to put one and two together. Whether you get 11 or you get two, it's up to you. What it is, and you can see it in the family. And there were certain topics that are taboo. You can't touch them. Yes. You can't talk about them, because that's how things were. I suppose they were taught like that from their mothers and grandmothers and whatever. And things are changing right now. And I feel like parents are becoming more open.
Yes, definitely becoming more open.
Yeah.
Even my parents are now more open.
And look at that.
In comparison to them.
Yeah.
They used to say to me, we'll have this discussion when you're much older.
Eish,
and they literally kept to their word.
Yeah.
Some of the things they explained to me now. Like, when this and this is happening, it was because of X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Because you're now talking not as equals, but as peers.
Yes.
You're now older.
You can understand. Yeah.
You now have your own family. So you understand differently.
Mm. I suppose there's a bit of wisdom in there, because, I mean, there's certain things that as a 12-year-old, I mean, I want an open parent, but I'm 12. You can't be telling me stuff that's like for a 40-year-old and all that. So maybe there was a bit of wisdom in that. And I don't know if today's parenting style, where we are really open, is in itself a bit of a risk, but I'll leave it to parents and all those sort of stuff. You studied journalism. Did you always know from primary that you first wanted to study journalism? I know you did LLB as well, but journalism, was it always what you wanted to do?
So I always say that journalism chose me. I really, really didn't choose it. I interviewed a family relative when I was in, I was about what, 12? She was going overseas, and for me, this was such a great thing. And I just randomly started on a magazine. I interviewed her, and I wanted it to replace the newsletter at school, so I thought this would be a great feature. Fast forward when I finished, oh, in grade 7, we used to randomly host shows. There's a friend of mine who's now a gospel singer. She used to force us every day. I would have to interview her because she would say she won an award, so she needs like a reporter or a presenter. She used to call it a presenter to interview her. And for some or other reason, I used to always be interviewing her. So I did a lot of public speaking, debates and stuff at school and poetry. So I think all of these things, when I look back in hindsight, I see that God places them in your path as a practice run for you for your future, and you're not even aware. Then in matric, I had the time of my life in matric, right? When people were stressed about prelims, stressed about exams, I was playing hockey professionally at school. Like we played so well that I thought we were going to make the provincial team. At some point, I was singing in the provincial choir. We were traveling all across the country singing, as opposed to sitting down, winding down, and actually focusing on my books. So when my results came back, and I was an all-rounder. When the results came back, and my parents had never had cause to worry about me and the results, because I'd always been a bachelor's entrance type of child. When the results came back, because they required me to sit down and focus, they came back saying that I don't qualify to go to do my LLB.
Oh no.
Then my parents had already paid for res, the holding deposit for res at UJ. My parents had already paid, like I'd already been accepted, you know, that provisional acceptance, awaiting your final results. Results come, I don't qualify.
Oh no.
UJ sends me, so I got the results in the morning. UJ sends me an SMS saying, "We reject to inform you that your pre-qualification has now lapsed because of your matric results." My mom says, "My money, because you've already paid the holding deposit for res." Then a family rel oh, a family relative then told my parents about Varsity College, that I could still go there, maybe get space. My mom was livid. She was not having anything of me. I was in the naughty corner, literally. When we went there, we were presented with a couple of qualifications. I literally made my father choose. I was like, "Dad, so what am I going to do? Because I can't do LLB," they explained. He said, "Journalism, it's always the second option." And that's how I studied journalism, literally like that.
Oh no. Sure. Did you ever at some stage when you were doing journalism and they do all those very complicated concepts, like, my, what am I doing here? Or you were like, I think I love this.
It came so naturally. It came so easily. It felt like a second nature, like breathing. It literally, I struggled with my LLB. I never struggled with my journalism degree. My journalism diploma, everything about it was natural. Even when I did arts, did the internship, the internship for radio, I did an internship for the newspaper. Everything about it was so fun. It was so easy. I've never had to think about it.
Sure. That's amazing. And I want to come back to that bit as well, but let's talk about the LLB one. Why LLB?
LLB was a qualification that I literally copied from another girl at school. She said she wanted, they asked us, "What do you want to be?" I said, "My mom wants me to be a doctor." They said, "What do you want to be?" I'm like, "Mngani, what do you want to be?" She said, "A lawyer." I was like, "I want to be a lawyer." Nam, lawyer. What it was, how it worked, I found out in high school. Then, oh, okay. Then I found a relative who is now a retired judge, my aunt's husband, who actually was an advocate. And he said, "Actually, I see potential. You could do it." And then it just was something that I always wanted, fell in love with. And the person who got me into the LLB never did the LLB. She did something completely different. And then I just followed through, and I'm now busy working as a candidate attorney.
So would you say, okay, I'm now trying to compare the two because journalism found you, right? LLB, I don't know whether it found you
I'm
or
chasing it.
you are chasing.
LLB and the legal qualification is me chasing it. It's like a fulfillment of a childhood dream. But journalism is like second nature.
And obviously in your mind when you are now comparing the two, there is some or other way in which they meet each other.
All the time.
All the time.
So immediately when I stopped working as a TV reporter at Newsroom, I then got a job as a national spokesperson at the NPA. I was working in a new unit that was formed. I had to do their communications from the ground up, their comm strategies from the ground up, also do a lot of public speaking, but it's a legally charged environment. I was speaking for prosecutors. Prosecutors are state attorneys. They are state at our state. Prosecutors, meaning they're lawyers for the people. So I needed to use the LLB qualification and what I'd learned there and mix it with the journalism, being on the streets, being able to package and being able to speak and put it together to essentially PR or advertise the NPA. So that's exactly where the two met. And every time when I worked at that institution, I kept saying, God, if this is not you, I don't know, because clearly this is you, because it cannot be that every path that I've been at collides here and makes sense here.
That's interesting. I've had a stint with Emma Lahlene, right? Not as a presenter or reporter or whatever. I wish I did at some stage. But I was just working for another corporate company and we were using them for some of our work that we were doing back in 2000, if I'm not wrong. Right. And then that's how I know Emma Lahlene because I'm a Joburg, I stay in Joburg, but I was doing work in Witbank, that side, Grill, as well as Ogies, Paul. I know those towns because I've stayed there for like 2 months or so because of the project I was part of. Middelburg, I know it very well. I've been to Middelburg, I've been to Standerton, those side of Mpumalanga, I've been there because of work. And so I had that interaction with Emma Lahlene, and I've always found the station to be really upbeat, very relevant, very interesting shows that were there. And of course, because I was advertising with them, I wanted my money's worth. So I was literally counting every number because they said we're going to advertise, I think, 4 or 5 times in a day. I was like counting, sitting there. Because I needed to report to my boss, like, yeah, no, they advertised 5 times today and all that. But what was it like at Emma Lahlene? Because like I said, I had a good interaction with them because of the advertising. But what was your experience with Emma Lahlene?
Yo, Emma Lahlene FM was so different.
Yeah.
It definitely contributed significantly
Yeah.
to my repertoire of stuff that I can do.
Yeah.
Because at Emma Lahlene FM is a community radio station. You are
Yeah.
not just a newsreader. I was newsreading there.
Yeah.
You're not just the 12 to 2 newsreader. You are the journalist that gets the story for the next newsreader. You are the one that preps for your own show, does recordings, clips, news
Sheesh.
clips that are going to be
Eish.
used in your show.
Eish.
You are the one that has to also prep and be in sync with the
I
presenter,
know.
because after reading the news, there's a banter that happens. I am a person who really believes in preparation. I over prepare all the time because I feel it's completely disrespectful to God, who places you in places and then you
True.
are not ready
True.
for the platform that He places you at. So, what was great about Emma Lahlene FM is that I fully got to get a different side of journalism, because at Empower, once again, it was very, very commercial. Empower FM, which is now Rise FM. With the Malahleni FM, it was very community based. So many of the stories that they prioritized were about the community. So that was interesting for me because I got to be newsreader, co-host, presenter in a way, as well as the reporter on the ground that collects, or journalist on the ground that collects, edits, cuts your own clips to be played.
Eish.
So for me, it was just such a breath of fresh air and a
Yeah.
very character building tools.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I know exactly what you're talking about because we at some stage, I mean, this station is like 2 years now. So we're still a baby, we're still very young. And for the strides that we've done, I think we've really done quite very well. But I understand exactly putting the show together, you know, I was like, this thing is so much for us. And you also have to then present the show. So I get exactly what you're
With the
saying
same
because,
energy
you
that you,
know.
after you've done all the cutting, clipping, prepping, making sure guests arrive,
Yo.
making sure you have fillers. Sometimes at MLH FM with music, making
Yeah.
sure you have the right music for the right
Bona,
show.
bona.
It, yo, but
Yeah.
it's great at the end when you listen to
Yes.
the show post
Yes.
everything.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's always tough, but like you're saying, it's really amazing because
Yeah.
I think you tend to learn a lot about yourself in the process because you wear different
Yes.
hats. When you're presenting, you wear a different hat than when you're putting the show together,
Yes.
cutting the clips, listening to the sound bites, thinking about what should go out on social media. And
Yes.
yo, if it's not an emotional roller coaster ride, then I don't know what is because we go through the most sometimes doing this thing. And
Definitely.
people don't realize that they hear us speaking like this, and it's a lot of work actually
It's a lot.
behind the
For 30
scenes.
minutes, it's a
Yo.
lot.
I'm glad I'm speaking to someone who understands. And then all of a
Yeah.
sudden you went to ANN7. And I remember ANN7 back in the days when before
Yes.
of course they closed the station and all that.
Yeah.
That trajectory, I mean, that must have been a big gig for you.
It launched me.
Look at
Launched me. Every
shoot.
time people say, "But you work for the Guptas," I'm like, you know what? I never got to meet the Guptas, right?
Yes.
But the thinking and ideology behind ANN7 might have been flawed. But what it did for graduates who had no other exposure
Oh my
besides in their
goodness.
small towns is unmatched. I can name, oh, I could go on and on about how many people that station has launched,
Yo.
myself included.
Yo.
I was taught, imagine this, let me paint a picture for your listeners, right? Imagine you are in your really early 20s, right? You have a diploma, not from a mainstream university like OTUT or UJ, no, from Varsity College, which is a private institution. You are then given a Mercedes.
Shoo.
Yeah? A Mercedes
Ooh.
taxi. It was a Vito.
Phew.
You're given a Vito. They ask for your license. You show them, "I have a code 10. They're like, "Oh, okay. Here's a Vito.
Ooh.
Here's equipment for about 60K. It's
Shoo.
a camera, it's a tripod. Here are four other people you're going to be working
Oh
with. You're
my.
going to be a reporter. Here's a backpack. A backpack was basically our transmitter.
Yes.
Here's a transmitter. Here's a petrol card. Here's
Sure.
your map of all the places you're going to.
Sure.
When you get into this place, know that the accommodation for the next 3 days is sorted.
Ooh.
You're going to, and every Friday they used to give us about 1,100. This
Yo.
is somebody who used
Yo.
to earn peanuts
Yes.
at a
Community
community radio
radio.
station, and I don't begrudge them. I actually appreciate it. I'm so thankful for those peanuts, right? But now you're given an incentive every Friday, and you also get a salary every month end, and you also get to sleep at B&Bs
Look at that.
all across Mpumalanga,
Look
and we
at
also slept
that.
in KZN, parts of KZN,
Yo.
covering stories on the ground about build up to the 2016 local government
Yes.
elections.
Shoo.
You get to interview mayors.
Yeah.
You get to interview the
Yeah.
president. I got to interview the president. You
Yeah.
get to interview premiers. You get to interview people in business. I got to interview
Sure.
Khulupha Siwa, who's an
Yes,
Eskom
I remember
spokesperson,
him. Yeah.
a 20-something-year-old
Cha.
who is literally a nobody in the
Yeah.
media space.
Yeah.
And you now been and you're traveling with four other people.
Yeah.
The two are data capturers,
Yes.
basically asking people questions. Who are you voting for? What do
Yes.
you think about the elections? What are the service
Yes.
delivery
Yeah.
issues?
Yeah.
You have a cameraman who
Sure.
only has a qualification No experience. You have a
Sure,
producer who has no experience, also has a qualification, and you get to go live every single day, Monday to Friday. On weekends, you're off. You get to relax. Back on Monday, petrol card was swiping through toll gates. I don't know how. For me, I felt like a celebrity par excellence, because I was like, how is it that Intombazanyana yase eMalahleni is getting such.
Oh
I was like,
my.
God, this is amazing. And then at the end of the experience, we went to St. Lucia. For me, that was great. Like, it was a free holiday, but you're working. What I love the most about it, at the end, when I least expected it, I got awarded best reporter
Look
for
at
the
that.
show
Look at
with
that.
nine other teams. I was like,
Look
God,
at
I
that.
literally cried.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I
Sure.
couldn't believe it.
That's amazing. That's truly
Yeah.
amazing. I'm actually getting goosebumps as you speak about it because I'm like, God can make it happen.
Ukuzanywa uNkulunkulu. Literally, I say
Yeah.
that all the time.
Yeah.
Ukuzanywa.
And now, when you look back, would you say your career, what is the one challenge that you think you've really faced?
Being undermined.
It happens a lot in media.
Always. It
Yo.
wasn't just in media. I think you know how the word of God says that God uses the least likely or the
Yes.
most undermined. Like
Yes.
when they went to the prophets went to Jesse's house and they were looking for the next king. They
I
thought it
mean,
was the
exactly the big
taller,
ones.
older, better brother. But no, it was the dirty brother that is herding the sheep.
The less demure one.
The less demure one, right? I literally say God. God literally does it all the time for all of us. He literally picks the unlikely.
Oh my.
And then he elevates you and he
Ooh.
clothes you with
Ooh.
a robe of kingdom. And you're like, God,
Phew.
but are you sure? And he says, yes, I am sure. And I want you to
Eish.
walk in authority
Eish.
in that
Eish.
space that you're in. And I want you to never forget that uzanywa yimi. You are all that you are because of my favor, not by your own might or your own strength or your own knowledge.
We are done, Sisindisi. I think beyond that, really, there's absolutely nothing beyond it because uzanywa uNkulunkulu.
Literally.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's really amazing. Have you ever felt like an imposter?
Yes.
And how
Yes.
did you deal with that?
I printed out verses. So there's a I called. So what I do is that I look for mentors, right? And when I got to the one space where I asked God, I feel like such an imposter here. Like, I feel like I've bitten more than I can handle. I know you think I can do this, but I'm not sure I really can do this, right? So I called a lady who I knew was Christian, who had already been a spokesperson. It was when I was a spokesperson. And she basically gave me a Bible verse, right? She said to me that meditate on these Bible verses
Yo.
and trust in God that He knows what He's doing. You might not know what He's doing for you in this particular time, but He does. I literally pasted them on the wall, and I used to recite them every time I walked into the office.
Oh
That
my.
God, this is me again. You will never let my face overcome with shame. You'll not allow that. So I used to meditate on those scriptures each and every time until I got to a place where I was like, I man, clearly God knows what He's doing. So it's about reminding yourself that you need to meditate on the word. What got you there is the only thing that can sustain you and keep you there and take you to the next level.
Yo, what got you there is the only thing that's going to sustain you. I'm getting a bit of feedback, Sisinisu. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just try to call you again. Is that fine?
I'm really struggling with the video. Let me hang up and then.
Okay. So I'm gonna do that as well. I'll call you just now. So we are talking to Cindy Siwe, and she's been telling us a little bit about her life and her work in journalism. Uzanywa nguNkulunkulu, guys. I think that's amazing. Uzanywa uNkulunkulu and no one else, right? No one else okuzamayo but uNkulunkulu. Isn't that just amazing? I think that's really, really amazing. Okay, thank you so much for staying with us. Really appreciate you. As I mentioned, +27734703520. That's the number that you can talk to us on. And if you do want to share some of your thoughts on what Cindy Siwe has been talking to us about. Okay, we run out of time since Cindy Siwe, but what I want us to then get to is the money bit. Because that's the that's the interesting one, right? So yes. So how do you define your relationship with money?
Stable.
Okay.
My relationship with money is quite stable.
Okay.
Because I said I was raised by my mom being one of them.
Yeah.
She had a saying when we were growing up, it still rings in our heads now.
Yeah.
That take care of the cents and the rents will take care of themselves.
Ooh.
So, okay. Like I said, my mom was a penny pincher.
Yeah.
Like no other.
Yeah.
So my relationship with money in the beginning was more of a, hey, I'm not sure, nyaksaba, rather not spend.
Yeah.
Then later on, it became a situation of, oh, okay, every decision you make, you must make it calmly. It must be rational.
Yeah.
It must make sense. So even when I bought my first car, there were so many checks and balances that I made sure to go through first.
Okay.
I still drive the car that I bought how many years in 2018?
Sure.
In all the career progressions that I've been to, I haven't changed cars. I don't need to change cars.
Yo.
I'm not defined by my car.
Yo.
But there are other more important things.
Yes.
So my relationship with money is very,
very, very, very stable. Very
stable.
Okay. I think you're part of a few people who can actually be bold enough to say they've got a good or stable relationship with money, because a lot of us, money is that very difficult thing. It's like we're getting there or whatever the case might be. But that's interesting. Okay. I want us to wrap it up in this way then. If you look at your younger self and with what you have achieved, which is remarkable, what is the one advice you would have given your younger self?
Be patient with yourself.
Be patient with yourself.
And
okay.
All the challenges that you experience are not a reflection of you, but are the hurdles you have to get through to come out as a better version of yourself.
Okay.
I think what I definitely, because I think for the longest time, each challenge that came, I used to feel like it's a jab to who I am.
Yes.
But be patient with yourself.
Be patient with yourself.
It gets easier.
Love it. Love it. And would you do anything different?
No.
No. Still the same trajectory.
No. Definitely wouldn't do anything differently.
Sure.
I'd still not waste my time. But I'd still go through all of the different jobs that I've gone through.
Yeah.
Because each and everyone, including that stint when I had a magazine, there was a time later on after varsity when I couldn't get, because I didn't get a job immediately after varsity, where I started my own magazine. I learned a lot of tricks and things that I still use now.
Yeah.
Okay. Like I can basically edit anything.
Yes, yes.
So every single step was worth it.
Mm. Okay. Radio, TV, journalism, Bona, you've done it all, LLB now. Where do you think your next 10 years is going to?
Business.
Business, okay.
Yeah, definitely business, but not conventional business, not like Nyovuli law firm.
Yeah. Oh, I would have thought you're going there.
No.
Oh.
I think tap more into my more creative side.
Okay.
I always tell my parents, because my parents have been teachers their whole lives, do not expect each 10 years to look identical with me. Tomorrow I could be a doctor. Another day. So basically, this is one big journey that I'm literally embracing. Whatever, wherever God sends me is where I will go. And I will enjoy it.
I love that. There are young people who look up to you. There's also young men who may also be looking up to you as well. But there are young people who are just looking up to you. What would be your message to them, especially given the fact that I think we are quite challenged with high youth unemployment.
Yeah.
There's a lot of socioeconomic issues there's nowadays. There's a loss of hope for that matter.
Yeah.
People have given up and they feel like, you know what, my life doesn't matter. Some have taken their lives. I mean, we know them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all mm-hmm. that. What would be your message to them, given your life and what you've went through?
You're not a statistic.
You're not a statistic.
Would be the first thing. And the fact that there's so much youth unemployment does
yeah.
not mean you will be unemployed. We've all been unemployed at some point.
Yeah.
But in the unemployment period, we all did something.
Yes.
Every single person who has a success story of some sort
yeah.
has experienced unemployment, but they've started things. They've kept themselves
yeah.
busy
yeah.
in that time.
Yeah.
Fill your time with things that set your heart ablaze, that get you excited to wake up so that the little light in you does not die. Even if you are, for example, an unemployed social worker,
yes.
in that interim, volunteer at an NGO
yeah.
that is walking distance from
exactly.
your place, get
exactly.
to interact. In those moments is where you get your next breakthrough.
Yeah.
But sitting at home and Uchigene langa literally is not going to get, it's going to put you in more of a depression, and you're going to, unfortunately, by doing that, make people around you say, Imfunda isis. And it does help. It might not, we don't go to school necessarily just for jobs and promotions. We go to school for our minds to be opened, for us to be able to dream differently. What I do and I encourage other young people to do
sure.
is, when I'm at my lowest,
yeah,
I window shop.
Oh.
I literally go. I have gone flat hunting when I did not have more than 1,000 rand in my bank
yeah.
account. I'd meet yeah. agents. To people, it seems like we are
lanya
lo.
Yeah,
I would meet agents. I'd
yeah.
get in. You know when you park your car outside, people think you have money.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
park your car, you go in, whatever car it is.
Yeah, yeah.
You go in, even if you borrow someone's car.
Yes, yes.
Your malume. Or
yes.
You go, you see a place that will motivate you
yeah,
and remind you why
yeah,
it is that you started.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'd only get those things or dreams fulfilled or better
yeah,
5 years later.
Yeah.
But I was shopping for them. You know why?
Sure.
Because the Bible says, as far, this was when he was talking to, In I think it was around Genesis, as
yeah.
far as you can see,
yeah.
I have given you, declares the
exactly.
Lord. So if you can't see it, you
yo.
Can't have it.
Yo, yo.
So geza ube muhle uhambe uzilulise kuchi. Geza ube muhle uhambe uye eluwela.
Yeah.
Efoshini.
Yeah.
Look at the bag. Take
yeah.
a picture with the bag.
Yeah.
It motivates you to
exactly.
keep waking up each day.
Exactly. No, it really does. And it makes you feel good.
Yes.
It makes you feel like
yes.
you can do it. One day you're going to walk in
yes.
here and swipe your card and be like, I'm buying this cash for that matter.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really amazing. Thank you so much, Sisini. So, and where can people find you across social media?
Yo, so just Google Cindy Siwe,
yeah.
Twala Sabuka. I'm on Facebook. I'm on, my Instagram is private, so I'll get
okay.
you first. But my, I think I'm more active on Facebook.
Yeah.
X, it's a bit toxic.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you inbox me, I'll see it
yeah,
and I'll
yeah.
respond. But I think your best bet would be Facebook. I actually go through my messenger and read
okay.
and comment to people who
yes.
say things. But another thing for young people, if you see someone who's doing something you
yes.
like, we really aren't scary.
Yeah.
We're just ordinary people.
We're just
so
ordinary
if,
people.
If we have time, we'll definitely assist you. Just text us, say what you need. We get you connected with the right people. Or just talk to you and tell you
yeah.
that ufana nam,
yes.
you can do it and better.
Yes.
Actually better.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, on your Instagram, please accept mine. Please, you know, just look at it, but
okay.
please accept mine.
I'm a very, very private person.
Yes,
so a lot
isn't
of people it? That know me.
Yeah.
I'm very, very private.
Yeah.
But Facebook, I.
Yeah, bona. You've got it. Thank
I'm
you so
more
much.
Active.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. We really appreciate you. I think this is part one. We're still going to be talking quite a lot. I think there's still a lot to unpack. The greatest enemy is obviously time. But thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you so, so much for having me. It's nice doing interviews and be able to share about the word of God.
Waiti king.
Yeah.
Thank you, man. And God bless you.
Yeah. God bless you as well. Thank
Thank you
you.
so much. Of course, there we were talking to Cindy. So you were telling us a little bit about her own life and what she's been through. I hope that you have been encouraged and you have been blessed and you've taken gems and insights for yourself that you can apply in your own life.
Be part of the conversation. Send us a WhatsApp message on +27 73 470 3520. Or call us at +27 12 001 7679. Let your voice be heard. Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. From broadcast to baptism.